This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
So our speaker today is Matt Landis. Besides being a pastor, he also owns his own business, Landis Technologies, and his business has been providing IT management for other companies for 25 plus years. So with that, let's give our attention to Matt.
Okay. Well, thank you, Gerald. What we're going to talk about today, and I see old friends and new friends and very technical people, and I think Nate is going to say not super technical or middle technical, and so managers and IT managers and a little bit of a spread, but we'll try to have something that everyone can take along and that it's interesting. We're going to look at a bunch of things. I was going to go down to this list, but I think I'll just jump through it a little bit. Who is this session targeting? Well, not philosophers of technology. But we're thinking, I think the people we have in the room, you know, if you're a small business owner, maybe a general manager, in-house generalist IT manager, Caleb, does that describe you?
A little bit more than that.
You're more specific than that?
Well, more specific, but it's larger systems,
yep.
Networking,
yep.
Administration stuff.
So, and people that have, you know, you want to manage your business, and you might be a growing organization, or you just have a managed mindset. That's probably why you're here. People that don't care aren't here. You're welcome to step in. We always want computers that work well with babies, so that's welcome here.
I think I'll be able to keep her quiet.
Good. That's all right if she makes a noise. And I thought about, you know, an Anabaptist session on best practices. Maybe I should dial it back just slightly. Maybe if not best, at least some good practices, okay? So we'll make sure we're Mennonite here today. I saw some other sessions said best practices too. And I'm going to give a disclaimer. I am not a day-to-day technical engineer. You had asked if I program. Yes, I programmed for many years, and yes, I did technical work for many years, but we are a company approaching 30 employees, and so I tend to be behind others trying to enable them. But one of the things, I think someone said this in another session, you know, what I tell our guys, we write code and we do IT, but the thing that we're doing is we're taking care of people. And we'll talk about that in the next slide a little bit. Much of this content is a compilation from our whole team, and I see a misspelling there, Atlantis Technology. I wish I could mention their name specifically, and this is an older picture. Some people are missing on here, but many of my colleagues have given input on this, so they should get some credit for what's going on here. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is conditions for having a reasonably supported computer network. And a couple of things that we usually ask for is if you have software on your network, specialized business software, you have to have a support contract. It's not uncommon, we'll have people come to us and they say, we'd like you to really make sure our whole network works perfectly and smoothly, but they want to somehow get out of doing the support contract with their ERP or their accounting software. Well, you have to have, for those specialized software, you need to keep your contracts so you have support. When something goes wrong, you want to be able to call somebody. Often they think it's too expensive. Well, you guys could just somehow figure it out. You don't want that stress. We don't want that stress. And you want things to run smooth. Have a service contract with your business software. The other thing is key, critical, hard-to-replace hardware. Have support and warranty on that as well. It's just if you want things to work well. And what are some things? Well, servers. Are there pieces in your server that are not easily replaced? Well, you don't want it to go down one day and then you have real difficulty getting that. Maybe a key firewall. You want to be able to call. So have support on those key pieces. If it's something little that you can have a spare around, so what? You know, that's great. But on those key things, have warranty and service plan on it. And the other thing is have reasonably maintained and replaced hardware. You know, when people come to us and they want things to run smoothly, and they say the other guys, they weren't doing a good job and nothing was working good, and by the way, we have a 10 or 15 year old server. Well, that there's a reason for that. So, you know, have reasonably maintained hardware. Why do we think about best practices? And I alluded to this initially. We want to take care of our people's day-to-day well-being. My opinion is that people's stress levels, trading some dollars for some people's stress levels is well worth it. Catastrophic financial loss. I don't know if anybody in here, you know, had a crypto virus, but they can easily be catastrophic financial loss. And I'm going to emphasize this over and over because we keep bumping into it. We have customers that call and they're urgent and they're frantic, and it can be seriously catastrophic financial loss. Trust in your organization. If you don't manage it well, you can lose trust in your organization very, very rapidly. And the increasing importance of data. It's getting to be super key to most businesses. So why are we doing it? So the first thing I'm going to look at is backups. And most people, how many of you know that you should have a backup? Okay. I think only the babies didn't raise their hands. So that's good. And so I always think to think about backups at four levels. And the first level is zero. No backups. You're just feeling lucky. Hopefully everything turns out good. But none of you are doing that. That's great. But that's not good. Of course, then the next one is I have an idea. The reason you raised your hand is because you all have a scheduled regular backup at a minimum. That's why you raised your hand when I said, do you have a backup? But did you know that just having a scheduled regular backup is not enough? What else needs to happen? Caleb is Cam's IT manager. He knows the answer. Don't tell him. I'm going to try it. Number two, are you monitoring that your scheduled backup is actually running? So first of all, I have a backup, and I have it scheduled. It's supposed to be running, but is it running? Did you put your eyes on it and check that it's actually running? But is that good enough? Nate's getting on. He's getting on the trend here. No. Do you occasionally test that you can actually restore the backup that was scheduled, and that you watched that it was going, and then you can actually test that when you do a restore, it actually works? But is that good enough? By now we know the answer is no. That's not good enough either. What's the last one?
Do your own personal backup. Like, other than some of these online, that's another step in there.
Mm-hmm.
Versus cloud-based versus a
okay.
hard drive.
You
multiple,
might be...
multiple copies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, multiple copies.
Offsite. In a higher state.
Is it secure? You're kind of all saying the same thing. So, is it scheduled? Did you check to make sure that it's actually going? Did you test that when you restore it, it actually works? But then the last one is, let's say you have all of this, and then one night someone gets in and does a crypto lock on all your data, including your backups. Then what? That's why it needs to be secure. So I think the way I tell people to think about backups is these four steps, and do them all, and you'll be good.
Can I just jump in?
Go ahead.
So the last one, when you talk about secure backups,
yes.
What you're talking about is disconnected and / read-only
yeah.
type of things.
Yep. We'll go to the next slide and kind of lay that out more. He's making a good point. So what do we mean by a secure backup? It means that people who can get to all your other data can't get to this thing. So there's some kind of a block between the two. I talked to one of our guys, and he says that we typically follow a 3-2-1. And you were kind of saying it, multiple copies, different media formats, and at least one offsite. And some of the ways that you can keep your regular data and this backup from being accessible from the same place is have it on a PC that's non-domain joined. That's what they're attempting to do here. It's like they can't easily get to the backup the same way they can get to your other data. he uses sort of theological language here. If an immutable backup is not available, in other words, one that cannot be changed, there's no way a fellow can log in from remotely and change it and crypto lock it or do something like that. Then another option is kind of what Nate was saying, a air gapped. In other words, you unplug it, they can't get to it. So that's another way to do it. That's maybe a little lower tech way, but a perfectly fine way. Totally fine. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, there's actually higher tech air gap ways of doing it, like where you have you automatically digitally unplug it. So that's it's a perfectly fine way to do it. And then another thing, this is more about disaster recovery. So let's say you get, you know, something happens and, you know, what level of continuing to run do you want to have? So in other words, if something happens and you need to restore a backup, restoring a backup, as Caleb and sometimes can take a while. It depends what's going on. So do you want to have another server that can pick up if one fails? And that's a replica server is what we're talking about. It's kind of disaster recovery. So that's thinking about backups. The next thing that I would like to talk about is the idea of regular maintenance. And we had a customer, one of the things that we do find is a problem when we sell, let's say, a new server or a new network implementation, they have this nice $10,000 brand new server, and there's kind of this idea, well, good, I'll have it for 5 years and I don't have to do anything between now and then, and everything will just run smooth. And that's a mindset that we tried to erase. We recently had a customer who had a server that was getting really old, and our techs kept telling them, you really need to replace it. You also need, there's a couple things you should be doing about security. You should have more than just password-based security. And they're saying, oh, well, you know, tomorrow, you know, next week, sometime we're going to do this. We're going to, you know, we're going to fix the passwords and we're going to get the new server. But it just kept going month after month after month. And while they were waiting and to do that and not doing their maintenance and not taking care of things, someone hacked their password, got in, and really started being creative. What they did is they sat there, so they were logged in, they could see all the emails that were coming and going. And they got familiar and said, oh, we see one of their major suppliers, and they're spending a ton of money with them. What we're going to do is we're going to make an Outlook rule that just deletes all the emails from that supplier, and we're going to start providing the emails in place of the supplier. So they knew right what it was, and they could just modify the emails to exactly what they want. And so what they did is, after a couple days, they said, we'd just like to let you know that we're changing our banking system, and you need to re-enter your banking system. So it looked like the email was coming from the supplier. So they changed the banking information so that they could continue to pay their supplier. And this just kept going and going and going. And after... the supplier did not notice it, and this was a big supplier, and neither did the company. And after $1.3 million was paid, the guys that were hacking got a little too greedy, and they picked up the phone and said, called them and said, you know, we would like you to change your banking information again. I don't know if something got unhooked or something. The only problem was that the hackers called and they had a British accent. And the company knew that nobody at their feed mill supplier had a British accent, and they got really suspicious. And so they called, and the supplier said, yeah, you haven't been paying us for 2 months, and we were trying to figure out why you're not paying us. Regular maintenance is really key. It was $1.3 million. So buying your nice new server and then just doing nothing, don't consider that an option. A best practice is that there's going to be some maintenance. You know, most businesses that we work with have no problem spending 40, or is it now 60? How much is a pickup now? They used to be 40, but I think they went up about 20 grand in the last year. They have no problem paying 60 grand for a pickup if that's what it takes to make things work good. But, you know, too often, whoops, that's not the slide I had in mind there. But too often, the alternative. When it comes to IT, which is very core to their business, they go to Google and try to find the cheapest thing and then don't maintain it on top of that. So my best practice, you will require some maintenance. And what does that mean? What does that mean for a network? Well, when we have customers that we are managing, some of the things that we do, remember, most people, if they have a network, they're not verifying the backup every day and doing test restores. And I'm curious what your regimen is for doing that, but you don't have to tell me right now. But most business owners don't have the time and they just don't want to think about that. But someone needs to do it. Verify the backup, make sure it's going, do a test restore. Some of the other things that we do in a network is make sure the disk space isn't getting all. That can happen on a brand new server. It doesn't mean it's old. Someone filled it up. Another thing is checking internet speed and reliability, making sure their antivirus is up to date, check the logs to make sure nothing went haywire or that someone's trying to sign in maliciously. Make sure certificates that are required to make the system run, make sure the proper updates are there, make sure their battery backups, make sure that their DNS didn't get on a bad list so that they can't get emails anymore. And other things that we check, another thing, a lot of a good commercial grade server, they actually have components in them that will let you know when something is going to fail. How do you like that? So excellent enterprise-grade servers actually can tell you when a hard drive or storage is going to fail in the future. And they'll actually give you a warranty on it before it actually fails. But I just give this list to give an idea of the kinds of things that we watch on a regular basis, regular maintenance that probably should be done to make things just work, that you don't have to be worrying about it and that you don't have some catastrophic failure. You don't have to remember the whole list, but there's just a lot of things that should be seen too. Another thing as sort of a policy and a procedure, I suggest that everyone get some kind of a replacement plan. Don't crash and burn. You know, just have a plan. I don't care what it is. Just have something. We recommend 3 years. That might be pretty small. The businesses we're dealing with want to have very low. Make it fit you. Maybe for you it's 5, maybe it's 7. But just decide something and then have that plan that you work through. You can budget it. The exact time isn't important. But just have a plan, and that way you don't get into this thing where things get way out of date and you have big catastrophic problems. If you don't schedule time for maintenance, your equipment will schedule it for you. And it's always when you don't want it. So the next thing I thought I'd talk about just a little bit is security. And just yesterday, I heard a colleague talking about his personal computer, and he says, I just keep getting three times in the last hour, I got this message from Google that someone knows your password and he needed to reset his password. So, in other words, and I don't think we talked about it yet, but security is a real thing related to passwords. Super important. Here is some ideas, just how long it takes to hack passwords. If you have a 4-character password with numbers only, it can be guessed instantly. Now, it's not quite that easy. Usually, tech guys put some things on so people can't just keep guessing. But it's super easy to guess passwords. Even if you have, 6 characters with numbers, upper, lowercase letters, and symbols. How many of you have a password that's at least 6? You don't just have one password. I know you have a lot of them. But that you have 6 or more characters, and you have numbers, uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and symbols. Most people have something they can remember. And I don't know, but they can be guessed really easy. So, what do we do about that? Our recommendation is that everybody in our day and age use multi-factor authentication. And I'm curious how many people here are using multi-factor authentication. Kind of. Do you? It's fine. I'm not putting you on that. That's kind of putting you on that. I'm just kind of thinking where people are. Yeah. Multi-factor authentication simply is, we just see how easy it is to crack passwords. Passwords are so easy to guess with the computer hardware that we have anymore. It's so easy to guess. What we really recommend is that you have an alternative way to authenticate that it's you that wants to sign in. You know, whether that's it's sending you a text message or you having an app on your phone that it sends to your phone and then you click OK so you can sign in. Pretty much our recommendation when customers come to us is if you have, and everyone does, if you have passwords that are facing the outside world, you really need to have multi-factor authentication.
I have one other thing on multi-factor authentication. If you want to go real secure, you can get a YubiKey security key. So.
Yep, that's another, consider multi-factor authentication. Yep, it's another way to authenticate yourself. Some people, the biggest reasons people don't do it is because it's inconvenient, and it is. And it's annoying. But the alternative is maybe paying $1.3 million to those fellows that are... And that is not... It's far more common. I give that story because it's the amount is pretty high. But that it happens, it happens all the time, and we are so tired of seeing it. There are ways. Okay, so the inconvenience, that's a real thing. It's a human factor. One way you can start, and I'm not recommending this, but you can at least get your administrator passwords on multi-factor. That would be one way to at least start. So if you're not doing it, and you're using Office 365 or Google or some ERP system that's on the web, you really should start doing it. Another thing that you can do is training and testing user vulnerability to being tricked, like that company I talked about when they got that email. If they would have been on top of their game, they would have recognized it. I'm sure that feed mill that got that, when they typed in their account information, it was probably a page that looked just like their real one. But if they'd have looked at it closely, it was not precisely like the one that they should have signed into. And you can get software to test your users in your network and see how vulnerable they are to actually responding to something like that. And I'm not sure what I should say. But we've had some people in our office, and very smart people can get tricked. Just say. But you can. That's something to do, and for a larger company, it's a perfectly excellent thing to do to get people on. You know, when they come, it's kind of like testing to see how you're going to respond when it happens, and it's really easy to do it. Ransomware and cryptoviruses at our office. It's not if, but when. If you don't do these minimal things like multi-factor authentication, some of the other things we're talking about. It's essentially, it's not if, it's just when. And back to that thing, what saves most people is that they have a backup that is secure, that last level of backup. So, another story. Thinking about being wise with spending too little. We had one customer who... was having the owner and an employee were going back and forth, and they were arguing about how much they should run the air conditioner, and it was a hot summer, and finally the owner, he said, this we're spending way too much running this air conditioner and keeping everything so frigid in here, and he went back and locked the room that he turned the AC off and locked the room that the AC thermostat was in and left for the day. And he was going to save himself, I don't know, $2? I don't know how much you save on air conditioner. Anyhow, the server was in the room that could not be cooled. And by the next morning, the server, this is not the actual picture, but the server was literally melted down and the hard drives were inoperable. So, my argument is don't, or my point is not don't argue with employees about air conditioner. But be wise with spending too little. That was a pretty unwise decision. And probably came down to an argument with an employee more than anything else. But the owner very sheepishly called and needed some help real quick. And it wasn't a tiny company either. I think here's my slide that I was thinking ahead before. We have no problem buying a $60,000 pickup, but when it comes to our IT, too often people go on Google and say, what's the cheapest thing I can get? And we have to modify that. I understand not everyone has the same budget. Totally, that's not the point. There's different budgets, but think wisely about saving money. We get the question, you know, why buy an enterprise versus a consumer-grade PC? And I'm not here like the, you know, preaching the gospel of getting enterprise PCs, but some people, we often get the question, why would I buy an enterprise one versus just go to Walmart and get one? Well, one is usually warranty. Remember I said, think about the life cycle. You know, how often are you going to replace it? Well, you will see on enterprise workstations, PCs, and servers, they often have 3-year warranty. And what that means is they're expecting that thing to have roughly a 3-year life. If you go to Walmart, you're probably going to get a 1-year warranty because they're assuming it's going to be a little more disposable. It's the grade of components they use. And another thing is the version of Windows is meant to work on a network. And another thing I think about, the biggest cost of getting a new computer is not the difference between a cheap or an expensive computer. It is the cost of actually getting things working on the new computer. So give that some thought when you do it. That's a little thought. Some other things about hardware to consider. You know, equipment is increasingly cost effective, and my suggestion is don't skimp. But of course, we have different budgets. But some things to think about. What are things that might be worth spending a little extra? Maybe everyone here does it, but one of the things we often see is dual or multiple monitors. You can just exponentially increase somebody's productivity by a simple, cheap, extra monitor. Battery backups. All your equipment should be on a UPS anymore. You just the electric blinks, you don't lose what you're working on or anything like that. UPS. The other thing is quality keyboards. If people are really using their keyboards, we have developers and they pound those keyboards all day long, and you can get really quality keyboard. It's not that expensive. They're probably less than $100. I don't know what they are, but and they can just be a better experience. And the last one I would say, we are doing more and more, probably, I don't know, probably everyone here is doing much more audio and video conferencing. And just get some basic, meant for the purpose headsets, speakerphones, and video webcams. It'll make your experience exponentially better, and we'll talk about this a little more. PC care, things like AdBlock can be really nice. Antivirus and antivirus, this used to be a bigger thing. We see it as something receding in importance. It'd be interesting to hear what others say. But still, Windows Defender is sufficient. It's free. It comes with. Just make sure it's managed and running and working. That probably the female guys that did the 1.3 probably would have been alerted if they would have Microsoft Windows Defender on. It probably would have alerted them. They're clicking on something that looks suspicious, but they weren't maintaining things, so they didn't see that. Key computers. If you have key computers, they probably should be backed up as well. Give that a little thought. And that's all I have on that. The other thing is firewall. This is thinking about security. Another question we get is, it's maybe a small or even a medium-sized business, and you know, we got this DSL router that the telephone company sent me. Why can't we just use that as our kind of security device? And we have some reasons there. Maybe I'll just go right on to using an enterprise-grade firewall. You know, what are the reasons? And we get this question a lot. Why would you use that? What are some benefits of using an enterprise-grade firewall versus something that, you know, once again, you get at Walmart? Well, one of the things, you have complete control over the network. I don't know, I'll go in more detail on that. The configuration can be very, and cheaper ones are more expensive, but this could be maybe a similar thing, that you can easily recover it. Enterprise-grade firewalls will allow you to connect locations with VPNs if you want to do that. They'll also let you add additional security kinds of things that as you move forward, you most likely will want someday or another. And that's things like content filtering, antivirus built into the firewall. And the other thing that we see is people wanting to filter traffic from certain locations in the world. I have nothing against Russia, but often you don't want traffic from Russia, or maybe even Ukraine for that matter, Eastern Europe. That's where the hacks often come from. And so better firewalls will allow you to do geography-based blocking of traffic to your network. Another one, a really significant one, supporting internet redundancy. The internet has become more and more important. I'm not sure how many of your phone systems are now running over the internet instead of over a telephone line. I think yous are using something internet-based. Am I thinking right? That's fine. Doesn't matter. But you can, with an enterprise-grade firewall, actually have two internets. The one goes down, you're still running. So you don't have to worry about the internet going down. Now, this is going to be a business scenario. It's probably not, you're not probably going to do this in a home. But you can have a backup internet, and that way if the one goes down, the other one keeps running, and someone hits a telephone pole out there and your cable keeps running and your telephone-based one doesn't. But you can just keep running even if there's a little bit of a snafu like that. What are the other ones here? DNS proxies so the internet can continue working if your DNS server's down, and supporting VLANs to keep traffic separated. It's a little technical. Those that need to know will know, and those that don't, it's another thing that is a benefit. Network infrastructure to consider. So we were talking about things to think about. One of them is having a dual WAN. What I'm saying there, just repeating what I just said, and that is having redundancy on your internet. If one goes down, it keeps running. Enterprise-grade firewall, we talked about that too. Another thing that we see is have a good, solid Ethernet cabling in your business. That's very common to see that's not the case. It's not that much of an investment, and it can just save a lot of problems. Of course, some people use Wi-Fi. You can do that too. But another thing, switches. The switches and your Cat5, if you're running on a wired network, it's what makes everything run smooth. So just get something good. So I'm going to switch gears a little here, and I'm going to talk about meeting rooms a little bit. This is a little different, angle. But a couple months ago, I went to our team and I said, I'm getting sick and tired of every time I walk into our meeting room, I spend about 5 to 10 minutes at the beginning fiddling around underneath the table and messing with the remote to get it on the right source and to find the right cable for the thing that needs to be plugged in, somebody's Android phone or their iPad or their... And I was so annoyed that I decided to go on a... we have to have a solution that every time we walk in the room, within 30 seconds, we can be using the room. And I don't know if anybody else has this problem, but we see it pretty often too, and we thought we need to be a good example. So we started checking what we can do about this. And what we found is that most common scenarios when people walk into a meeting room is they want to project with a PC via an HDMI cable, exactly like we're doing in this room. And I literally walked in this room, and in 30 seconds, I was using this cable and projecting. No sweat there. But then there's other scenarios. Somebody comes in the room and they don't have an HDMI. Oops. We'll test it out here.
You got 30 seconds.
Okay. There you go. It's not uncommon that people come in with a PC that maybe doesn't have an HDMI, or they have a PC or an Android or an iPhone or an iPad, and they want to project wirelessly to this TV. How do you do that? That's another scenario. Well, then there's a couple more scenarios. That's all in room. So what we're doing right now is all in room. We're just walking in the room and want to use the room and show things to people in the room. But then there's also the scenario that I wanted to work within 30 seconds, and that is when you walk in a room and you want to do a video meeting with someone else. Has to be 30 seconds, right? How many of you can walk in your current meeting room or rooms and start your video call in 30 seconds? He's saying no.
Yeah, we got some Surface Hubs.
There you go. You're on. That's pretty much what I'm going to say. Not quite. But that's good. So, you know, you want to walk in the room. My opinion is you want to walk in the room with HDMI and get it working. You want to walk in the room wireless and get it working. You want to walk in the room and do a telephone conference and have it working. You want to walk in the room and do a video meeting and have it just work. And so how can we do this? What can solve this challenge? Currently, most meeting rooms, when you walk in, what you're going to see is either a monitor or a projector, and that's it, and a bunch of cables laying on the table, and a remote that you have to figure out how to switch to the right thing, and you never know which is the right one, and then maybe they want to do remote, so then there's like a dongle plug-in in the back that maybe works or shows half the screen, and they get stuck halfway because it can't, you know, the Wi-Fi, the wireless gets... That's the reality in a lot. Cables draped, the HDMI will work solidly and good for PCs, but for phones and tablets, the Miracast or the wireless doesn't work that hot. And how can we solve this problem? Well, there is a solution, and it's not horrifically expensive. I predict, and when I came in here, I almost thought they were doing it here, but they're not. They're working on it. 3 years ago, I don't think that this facility had these things. They're trying to actually solve the problem I'm talking about. But my suggestion is having a room system in the meeting room can take care of almost all of these problems. And it can be as simple as a bar below it. And what it includes is a way to wirelessly project to the screen, a way to wired connect to the screen. It has a video camera built in, it has a speaker built in, and it has a good microphone built in. You don't have to figure out where to plug things in because it's plugged in all the time. So there's no cables that you have to figure out from the mic to the speaker to the video. You can do HDMI just like this. That's pretty normal. But you can also do wireless projection to this device, this room system or collab bar. For video calls or meetings, you can just walk in and press join. It actually joins the meeting that you scheduled for this room. So you just, in your Outlook, you schedule and say, I want room so-and-so to be. You can easily schedule the meeting, and another benefit is other people can see when you scheduled the meeting. When you walk in the room, one press, and it works. You joined the meeting. And there's some other benefits, but I won't talk about it. The cost for this device, because that's what we wonder, it is between $1,500 and $2,000. So there is a cost involved. Now, it's a lot less than his Microsoft Surface Hub, which was...
around $12,000.
How much? $12?
Around $12.
So I'm letting him say that to show how this is changing. I think most people, if you can afford a meeting room, you can probably afford this bar that makes the meeting room work. That's my suggestion. And this one, you know, they can work with Zoom, Teams, Google Meet is in some cases a little tough. But this will work in conjunction with your video conferencing system as well. Considerations for remote worker. I'm trying to think. We're trying to land at what time are we trying to land here again? Quarter after.
6 minutes.
6 minutes, okay. I'm going to jump over remote worker, even though I know everyone's trying to figure out how to do that. I think we'll just have to jump over that one, bring your own device. We talked about this a little beforehand, but I think I'm going to jump over this too. Maybe I'll jump over that one. And then I'm going to talk about getting hit with a crypto virus. I said before, it's probably, if you do not take the right precautions, it's not if, but when you get hit by a cryptovirus. And so that probably means we should probably tell people what to do if it happens, because you're going to probably experience it sometime in your life. If you are considering, so if you get hit with a cryptovirus and your computer is locked or is encrypted and you can't access your data, my suggestion and my advice to you is, if you're considering negotiating to get your data back, communicate nothing with those that encrypt it and talk to a consultant first. I don't know how many people did not take that advice and they paid $20,000 extra for what they needed to get. And I'm not even saying you should negotiate with them, but if you're considering doing that, the second thing is, give no information. Don't tell them about yourself. Don't say, yeah, we're CAM and we are, you know, one of the biggest Anabaptists. Absolutely not. Especially do not disclose any value that the data has to you. Just don't. My suggestion is, for most people, the best thing is to just call a consultant, because they will help you and they will tell you exactly what you should say and exactly what you should do. Unless, you know, I'm sure Caleb has some good thoughts, but things we can do. Managing costs. There is very good pricing. You can save money by using not-for-profit licensing. Probably most people know it, but you know, the pricing I have here is just, I'm not a licensing expert, but from $12 a month down to $3, or $22 down to $5, and then some of them are even free. Yeah. And it depends. Overly simplified, if you're a 501c3, you probably can get it, unless you're school, and then that's a whole different story. But you can work with someone to figure that out. But if you're a not-for-profit, get the good pricing. The other thing that I would say in managing your costs, have a planned replacement cycle, and budget your costs. It will just make your life better. Consider costs to manage well. And manage them well up front. What it will cost to manage this over the life, instead of just what it's going to cost me to buy it, because that's not your cost. It's over the life of it. And then a last point. Thinking about having a trust advisor. We said if there's a cryptovirus, talk to somebody. Doesn't need to be us, but just talk to your person that you trust, your consultant. We had one customer that called, and he called us, and he said that someone called him and told him that his IP address is sending his friends really bad, awful things, sending them terrible stuff. And if he wants to stop it, they have a service that does IP scrubbing and cleaning. And he didn't call his trusted advisor. What he said is, well, that sounds nice. I don't want my friends to be getting a whole bunch of stuff spewed at them. And I would like this to be scrubbed and cleaned on an ongoing basis. And they said, for $3,000, we can do it for a lifetime for $3,000. And he's like, I think I'll do that. But that's not where it ended. The reason he was calling is, he said, you know, they called again this year and wanted $3,000 again this year. And I just paid it last year and they said it was a lifetime subscription. He could have saved himself all of that if he'd just talked to someone. So best practices, I think, whether it's an accountant in your financial or many areas of life, have a trusted IT advisor to call. You know, they can be used, depends how big you are, they can be used at different levels. Anything from a little advice one time a year to totally managing your network. You can fit your budget and it'll really be a benefit to you. And that's all I have. I don't know if there's any, I think there's some here that probably would have good ideas that they might want to share with the rest. I would be okay with that. Or if there's questions or discussion things that you want to bring up. I think we're getting pretty close to our time. But if there's anybody here that has additional, Caleb could probably answer some questions.
I don't know. I also have a whole bunch of questions.
Yeah, we all do. We're all, this is a continually learning thing. So, yeah.
Is there a benefit to a VPN?
Probably yes or no. If you're in Russia and you want to get to Instagram right now, it's your only choice. Caleb, what would you say?
So we currently use VPNs.
Yeah.
And there's different ways you can remote into.
Yeah.
Your central office or whatever. Some people use remote, Microsoft's remote gateway service,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Things like that. Yeah. I think both.
It depends what the architecture of your network is. You know, if you're using Microsoft Teams or Microsoft 365, you're not going to VPN into that.
Yeah.
And that's what most people are going to be connecting to. So it depends how you're architected. It's really when you need that.
One question.
It's less and less needed.
One question I had, really, this is totally techie, nerdy, whatever, but I have a question for you. And what is your experience with SD-WAN? Rather than, you know, having multiple locations linked together via firewall, VPN, but also then, what about SD-WAN? Do you have any experience with that?
I'm going to see if he's going to deliver me from evil or not. I'm not sure what to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
I knew it was technical, so.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.